The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The final trading days of the year are fast approaching. GDP estimates top 3.5%, and the bulls remained uber active. All this and much more on episode 490 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I think this is the last episode of 2016. We've had a great year, a lot of wonderful guests. And we go through some of the top podcasts, your favorites of the year, and some other things that are important, kind of finishing up the year, looking back at what has gone on and maybe a little bit about what to expect. So we do have the final trading days. And as we know, towards the end of the year, oftentimes we do see volumes tail off a bit. People going on vacation, people are enjoying themselves. You know, happy Christmas to everybody, Merry Hanukkah to everybody, and all the other holidays that you may be enjoying, or Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Depends on how you want to look at it. But there is this holiday spirit that goes on this time of year, as we know very well. And of course, you know, it's been a long year. A lot of things have happened. A lot of things that we learned about. Things that kind of made sense, and a lot of things that really didn't make sense. So I thought we'd start off with some of the items that we learned, or at least we think we learned, in 2016 as a bit of a recap here. And by the way, just to let you know, all of this, some of the information we talk about on the show, always on the show notes over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And of course, if you want to be one of the first to receive the information and alert of when a podcast is actually published, you could either go and follow me on Twitter, which is Andrew Horowitz, or on the disciplinedinvestor.com site, there's a form on the bottom right or maybe a pop-up, but basically sign up for the updates and you'll get an email of when we write something, an update, a podcast that comes out. Even when DH Unplugged is published, you'll get an update of that on email, so you'll never miss another one. Of course, you can also go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Now, the Disciplined Investor is now available also on Google Play. You ask for it and we put it up there. So all sorts of ways to listen. All right, getting back to what we learned in 2016. Well, I think the first thing we learned, I don't think the central banks have learned, is that negative rates are not so good. The thought of having negative rates, deposit rates, where it's a detriment to leave money on deposit with the central banks as a safety valve, is not really doing what it was supposed to do. Remember, what it was supposed to do was it was designed to force banks and financial institutions to, instead of putting money on deposit and holding it at the central banks, it was supposed to put it into the hands of investors and loan out money and spur on business and get the money into the system. But we saw in Japan and what we saw in Europe, it didn't seem to work that way. In fact, it really backfired pretty dramatically. That didn't stop the Bank of Japan or the ECB from pushing rates even further into negative territory. But it is very clear now that that has not been a successful experiment. And I use that word experiment literally because they had no idea before they entered into this process that it was going to, if it was going to work or not. And that's the funny thing about all of it, right? These academics that are in charge of the central banks around the world are just throwing up ideas, hoping for the best and seeing what happens, playing with fire. And it did backfire on them pretty substantially. While the yen initially, when this was all announced, did initially start to move lower, which was one of the things they wanted to do, the yen traveled much higher throughout most of the year until the election. And then it turned around very dramatically and dropped as the dollar rose significantly. And then, of course, the same thing happened with the euro. So I think one thing that we learned was negative rates, not so good. The other thing I think we learned later in the year here was that fiscal stimulus, or at least the hope for fiscal stimulus has now become more powerful than monetary stimulus. In other words, the idea that a lower tax rate and the potential for further spending on infrastructure, which we've had before, but never really went off and did anything significant, is much more exciting for people than lower rates, at least at this stage of the game. As the Fed is now seemingly on a rate hike process, however slow that may be, and however long that may take, the monetary stimulus, when you have rates near the zero line, become ineffective over a long period of time. In fact, what we've seen is it's really deflationary. Once you get across the line, you can't move any further, or at least there's not much to move. People are really saying, well, you know, they're not going to change very much, and I'll hold off on what I do. And I don't have to borrow the money right now. I'll wait some time. And then all of a sudden, we see that fiscal stimulus is discussed by the Trump administration, and the idea that we're going to see a repatriation and a tax holiday, lower taxes for corporations, lower taxes for individuals, and a very substantial infrastructure spend. All of a sudden, sentiment changes on a dime and all sorts of wonderful things happen with markets. And we see that all of a sudden, the opportunity for a growing GDP above these, you know, 1-2% anemic levels that we've seen over the last number of years may actually be something that actually happens. What else have we learned? Well, it appears that fake news or bogus web stories or things that are put on social media can be very powerful, as the web has allowed for anonymous content and the media has allowed for anonymous sourcing to be used. They've kind of set the stage for the availability of a lot of spoofing, a lot of incorrect information, non-factual stories and commentary to come out. And because we are so online, we are so entrenched in everything that happens, whether it's social media, whether it's a news story, whether that's how we get our content, a lot of people have been believing a lot of the things that have been coming out, and that has been able to shape a lot of the consciousness. Now, whether or not there was any fake or any other kind of oddities when it came to the election, I'm not sure. But we can definitely tell that the whole idea of spoofing and fake news has been a major issue and something that has been very detrimental. Now, whether or not there will be this uprising, this request and demand for truth and no more anonymity that will be allowed by major sources of the news remains to be seen. Because they want to be the first to be getting a story, and therefore, if they can't get anybody to really tell them their name, all right, fine, we'll say you're anonymous, or we're not going to reveal your source, and we're not going to reveal who you are, because they want the eyeballs, because it's all about money now. It's all about the ads. Who can get the clicks? Who can get the ad spends? So the fake news thing is definitely something that is going to have to be reckoned with in the future, and something that really shaped a lot of what went on in 2016. The other thing we learned in 2016 is don't assume anything. Don't assume that polls are correct or even registering right. We saw that Brexit wasn't supposed to happen, and then, oh boy, there it goes. It happened. We also heard that if Brexit happened, it would be a worldwide catastrophe, and it would be really very bad for markets, particularly in Europe and in England. Well, that was right for about 2 or 3 days, and then all of a sudden things turned around dramatically. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, because I think the fear of all of that, we talked about this in several different podcasts during the year, but the fear of this catastrophe and this breakdown of the financial system, if in fact a Brexit occurred, was met with a significant amount of monetary liquidity by the central banks around the world, and that was just immediately pushed into markets and just moved things up. And then it started the realization of, hey, maybe we can make a change. Maybe the masses can actually be powerful enough to enact a change instead of just going along with what has gone on over the last number of years. And maybe if that's the case, things will be better in the future than they are now. What do we have to lose? What do we have to risk? At least it's a change. We saw the same thing with the Trump election, right? There was supposed to be no way that Trump would win the election. Clinton was a shoo-in. And if, in fact, Trump won the election, what was going to happen? Markets were going to just crater. It would be horrible. The world would end. That lasted 5 minutes. Actually, it lasted through the middle of the night after his win, when we did see that futures were locked down for a little while there at their limits, down about 5% on the Dow and S&P and the NASDAQ. And then all of a sudden, they started climbing very dramatically. And then we had this massive rally that ensued to this day. Same thing we saw with Italy. We assumed that there was going to be a, you know, really not that much of a chance of that happening either. All these things that we have been assuming and told to believe, who knows who is putting out this information and why the assumptions are so very wrong. The other thing we learned, that the high dollar, which was supposed to be a very significant headwind for stocks and their earnings, which we haven't seen the actual effect of this yet. We haven't seen the earnings reports post the major rally in the dollar. But investors are supposed to be believing that this is really going to be very difficult on multinationals and the major companies that export. And so far, for whatever the reason may be, the dollar has hit a 14-year high recently, and stocks are falling along on the upside in the U.S. That's not supposed to be the case. We're not supposed to be seeing such a broad-based rally and involvement of many of the multinationals who rely on sales outside the U.S. for this kind of situation. I mean, it's not supposed to happen like this, but it is. Another assumption that seems to be debunked. So a lot of the things that we have seen and we're supposed to believe, we learned in 2016 that maybe that's not the case. Now, on the other hand, maybe we haven't seen the true colors of all this just yet. Maybe because Brexit has not been enacted and it's still unclear as to when it's going to be enacted, there is just this euphoria that maybe there's a chance that it won't, or maybe at this point, things are running on a high just due to sentiment and momentum. Maybe the case is that, well, the Trump election, there's a belief that all these wonderful things will happen and everything is priced into the best possible outcome, but not everything will. And who knows, maybe there's some wiggle room for something's just not right. Maybe the dollar being as high as it is going to, in fact, affect earnings in the future substantially. And even though there may be a tax reduction, that may not really offset some of the downward move of revenue and earnings that we will see over the next 6 to 12 months. We'll see in 2016 what we learned. Okay, we see that. What happens and what are we going to learn in 2017? That's the big question. Adding on to some of the things that happened in 2016 that were notable. We saw that global bonds appear to have stopped a 25-year overall advance. And in fact, November, we saw a 4% loss on global bonds, which was a record loss in any month. So global bonds all of a sudden are shifting along with the higher dollar and the fact that maybe there's going to be a higher interest rate regime in the U.S. And on top of that, we're seeing that there's a little less risk appetite for some of the areas that were yielding very low or negative interest rates around the world. I mean, eventually that had to come to an end, right? I mean, who wants to buy a bond with a negative interest rate with a guarantee that you're going to lose money? Even though the thought was that, well, the ECB was going to keep on buying. But remember, they dropped their monthly buying from $80 billion to $60 billion. They said it wasn't a taper. They said it wasn't a reduction because they elongated the time period that they were going to continue doing this for. But you know what? We know better. Now, in 2016, we also saw that student loan balances increased by $76 billion. It's a record. We had Brad Brainbridge on last podcast, I think it was. And we talked about student loans a bit. Make sure to listen to that. The market cap of the U.S. stocks in 2016 is now 38% of the world's total. That's pretty impressive. In 2016, the Dow Jones Industrial Average set, as of today, 43 record closes. 43 record closes. Looked in the beginning of the year that things were pretty awful, that there's going to be, well, a mediocre year at best. It started a big drop in the beginning of the year. All of a sudden started rising towards the third quarter. And then, of course, after the election, things just, you know, off to the races. 43 record closes for the Dow Jones Industrial Average towards that 20,000 mark. We also saw that European banks continue to implode. The latest one is in Italy, where Banco Montepaschi is now requesting a government bailout because they can't get private financing. I mean, who in the world in their right mind would want to provide equity financing to a bank that is clearly illiquid and insolvent? For years, we've had people just go after that with the realization or with the hope that, well, you know, if I buy the stock, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is the government will step in and prop it up and things will be fine. And all of a sudden, maybe people are coming to their senses here and saying, well, that may be the case, but probably it's going to mean nationalization where you're going to lose a big chunk of your money. There's only so much the government of Europe can do right now, and Italy in particular, after their recent resolution. Now, they tried to raise $5 billion privately. That failed miserably. And now the government steps in. So we'll see what happens, you know, moving forward, if there is a cascading effect where other banks that maybe have solvency problems are no longer going to be able to go to the market as they have been doing for the last number of years to request, private bailout, if you will. In 2016, we also saw the U.S. dollar-denominated investment-grade corporate bond sales hit a record for the sixth year. Companies are issuing more debt than ever because rates are low. And they knew, or at least they thought, that rates would be going higher. And why not just refinance any debt that we have at this point or issue a massive amount of debt and then do a buyback and a dividend raise? And we've exhausted that topic. But that's what's going on. They're still issuing massive amounts of dollar-denominated bonds on the investment-grade side. And while we did see that over the last year that buybacks announcements and overall buybacks have slowed a bit, the question is, how is that going to play out in the future? As interest rates go up, we have speculated that, you know, companies aren't going to be really going after any further issuance into the future if rates go much higher. And therefore, that's going to bring down the overall amount of buyback potential. And therefore, they're going to have to live on their current earnings without being goosed by a lower share count. Municipalities also issued the most bonds since 2003, as they're also racing to get in on the low rate environment before things change. Now, if you remember, one of the things we talked about probably a year and a half ago, and I put out a paper on this, it's called The Velocity of Money. And we suggested that this low interest rate environment that we have been living in some time has been pretty much putting a lid on the velocity of money. It's been cramping the ability for any kind of real money flow through the economy and for expansion of the overall economy. And we further speculated and then talked about how if interest rates were to rise, even marginally, that would happen is that you'd get people to start doing things because they realize, man, I better get this done before things change. I better get that mortgage. I better get that loan. I better do a lot more in, you know, now where I can. If I wanted to expand my business, let me get that loan and buy the goods now because interest rates are going up in the future and then it's going to cost me a lot more over time. And if you really take that and expand that concept, it shows that the velocity of money actually will increase, which is a very key part of an economic expansion as rates go higher. Now, there's a point that rates at a level that are too high, sustained for too long, will also choke off the velocity of money because there's only so much that people can borrow at a much higher rate. But as you go from a zero bound and you start moving it up, and all of a sudden you get those people to do things that they haven't done before because they're waiting and saying, what do I have to do it now for? Not a big deal. Rates are so low. It's not going to cost me much more. But you put in their mind that there will be rate increases over time, and you actually implement rate increases and show that you are actually committed to doing what you say you're going to do, even though we only had one rate increase in 2016. We're supposed to have four. We're supposed to have three in 2017. We'll see what happens. We've had two rate increases since 2008. Two rate increases since 2008. And now that we're seeing that rates are going higher, there was this gigantic concern that, oh my, what's going to happen to markets? So far, it really hasn't been a problem. In fact, we see that GDP is actually rising. We see that consumer sentiment is rising. Manufacturing is doing better. We also saw in 2016 that ETF inflows set a new record. Flows into ETFs have been monstrous throughout the year, when the idea that passive investing, and why deal with any kind of active management and this whole hedge fund universe and, you know, this alternative investments, let's just put it into passive investments, into ETFs at a low cost, and be done with it. Because you know what? Markets always go up. And if they go down, it's a good time to buy in, because it doesn't really stay down for too long. At least that's the theory that's going on right now. And you know what? We've seen this before. Everything cycles. And I think in 2017, when we talk about things at the end of the year, there'll be some areas of the markets that will say, you know what we learned in 2017? Everything cycles. What we believe to be true, maybe isn't. When the masses all believe that passive investing is the only way to play, they start piling into ETFs as the only way to really run their money. That will last for some time, and it will help markets expand. However, there'll be a few times that markets will come in and people will be like, okay, I'll just buy the dips. And they'll continue to put money into the ETFs. But eventually there'll be a realization that maybe this isn't working so well. And then you'll see all of a sudden a turnaround and a change, and mentality changes. Don't forget, in 2008, 2007, 2009, 2010, the whole buy and hold thing was debunked pretty well. Because buy and hold doesn't always mean buy and hold. It's buy and hold when things are good, and oh my God, let me get the hell out when things are bad. Get the money out of the market and then don't reinvest at the right time. I'm not talking about market timing. I'm talking about just psychology of investing. And finally, in 2016, we saw an 11-year high for U.S. home builder confidence. We're seeing apartments being built, not everywhere, but there's been a big expansion. What's interesting is that we're also seeing a slight leveling off of house prices. Been watching the Case-Shiller numbers on the 20 city over the year, and the expansion seems to be slowing. It's still going well. We're still seeing a 5% increase year over year, but it's been slowly coming in. There's only so much we'll be able to see the housing prices continue to move higher. As interest rates move higher, that may choke off some of the new homes and existing home sales. We've already seen mortgage applications drop off pretty significantly. New housing starts drop off. But we'll see what happens. That was kind of the big things, I think, in a nutshell, what happened in 2016 in terms of overall markets. Now, 2017, what's that going to bring? Well, that's a whole nother discussion. Possibly what we're going to see in the beginning of 2017 is there is a high potential for some tax selling to go on, with the notion that taxes may be reduced in 2017. A lot of people are holding off any kind of sales of assets that have major capital gains, and therefore there is the high probability that in January we will see a bit of a sell-off. Now, I'm not talking about a correction. I'm not talking about anything crazy right now. We'll have to see how that plays out and how the trend goes. But there is a very good chance that there'll be some tax selling that ensues the first couple of weeks at least, or let's just say throughout January sometime. This mean reversion trade that we've seen this year, where there has been what was working, we're going to stop doing, what hasn't been working, we're going to start doing. So we saw a tremendous move from technology, for example, to things like materials. It's been more impressive to see how the material sector has moved rather than the technology sector. But things like, steel companies, oil and gas companies have been on fire, just moving unbelievably. This whole mean reversion trade that goes on quite often where managers will say, okay, we have a broad-based portfolio that is diversified in all these different sectors. Which sectors haven't been working? Let's take some of the profits from some of the areas that have been working and put it into the other areas. That could be on a domestic versus international, stocks versus bonds, or a individual sector basis. Now, some of that was prompted after the election, of course, whereas there was this whole notion that massive infrastructure spends will go on. Therefore, we need to get into the Caterpillars and the U.S. Steels and Freeport-McMoRan's and anything that was related to any kind of an infrastructure build. And that was immediate. I don't think that was a situation that was thought out for a long time that, okay, we're going to plan this in the next quarter. You know, those things that haven't been working, we're going to put some money into and do a standard rotation of the portfolio. I don't think that that's at all what happened. I think they were forced into it. They saw that, oh my, this area is going to see a lot of potential benefit from some of the things that have been talked about. Let's get money in there now. We saw this massive sector rotation that happened because simply it started running, started moving. And we better get on that wagon, at least from a sector-based standpoint. I believe a lot of institutions were underweighted substantially in areas like in the materials in particular and the area of possibly defense, but not as much, and industrials. And this knee-jerk reaction after the election to, okay, put this whole sector rotation into gear right now. Let's not wait till the end of the quarter. Do it now. Really did a tremendous job for that sector. They also may have been moving out of bonds and into stocks. This is something that we talked about that could happen for years now, and it never happened. It may be finally occurring that investors are saying, you know, rates are going up, bond price is going to go down, we're not going to get the same benefits anymore. The Fed is slowing down on their overall stimulus. They're going to look for the fiscal stimulus. Okay, Europe is going to be reducing down. Okay, you know what? Maybe it's time we take money out of the bonds. We made some profits there. We've done well over the years. And as stocks have reasonable yields these days, we'll just put it in there. Now, the risk parameters change dramatically. But it would seem logical that if there is a requirement to be fully invested by an institution, if there is that requirement, that if they're going to sell the bonds, where else are they going to put the money? You know, the whole notion of there's nowhere else to go has been very much talked about and in play throughout the entire last couple of years. So 2017 could bring some selling. That's possible. We're definitely seeing some overbought areas that have been bouncing around a bit and questioning whether or not there is a reasonable valuation by any metric on the S&P 500, the Dow. Seeing that PE forward is now, 17, 17 and a half. PE looking backwards, about 26. The CAPE is at a pretty good high. This is it's an averaged, a 10-year averaging look at PE ratios over time. And that's at a pretty substantial level as well. And all of this is on the come. All of this is on the hope and the prayer and the idea that, oh, good news. We have all this coming. We have a lot of opportunity. We have all these things that were said and promises that were made during the election. Now we have the ability to possibly get these implemented because the Republicans control everything right now. And, you know, while we may see some things that are negative, it may be very positive for markets. All right, some other things for now into 2017. I mentioned we're on Google Play now, Stitcher, iTunes, Spreaker, all these different places. There's also a brand new, just launched Disciplined Investor website. We revamped the whole thing. You got to go over there and check. TheDisciplinedInvestor.com. Because now the podcasts are in chronological order, right on the front page. The latest ones are on the top. You can actually do an unbelievable search. You can click the button that says podcast, and it will do a whole search or show you in chronological order all the podcasts. You can play it right there. You can look it up by guest. You can look it up by stock names if you want to see, okay, in what episode did we mention, you know, stock ABC? You can do a search, and it will pull up all the episodes with all the guests and what we talked about in that episode. In addition, there's a really cool guest visualization page in there. All the guests that have appeared over the years, and the ones that have appeared more are larger, and you can see kind of how it plays out and where the most guests are located, et cetera. There's really cool stuff on there. Also, strategies have been updated, and there's a brand new virtual tour for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, how we manage money with with some stocks, with some hedges. We use the Aero strategy inside of there. So all of this is explained in a new, brand new, just published video. You can go over to the site. I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode too of how to get to that. But it's right on the site. You can look at the strategy. Just scroll down the main page and pick one of your strategies, whether it's Aero. Investology is coming out. There's a little form there that you can put your, I'm interested in this. You can see all this right there on the site. It's really cool. There's also new subscription options. DH Unplugged podcasts are listed there. The site, I think, looks dynamite. We're still doing some development on some other areas on the site, but what a big difference. Taking us a few years to come up with this new idea. TheDisciplinedInvestor.com. Need to check that out. Now, speaking of the new site, I mentioned at the top that I wanted to tell you what podcasts were the top for the year. We actually put up a new list that just came out over on the site of the top favorite episodes of 2016. The ones you downloaded the most, the ones that you listened to the most, the top 10. And I'm going to go through those right now because I want to kind of go through a summary of some of these. The number one was in March. It was tips from Matt Tucker of BlackRock, episode number 453. And he talked about bond ETFs. We talked about the benefits of ETFs over mutual funds and some of the detractions as well. And we talked about tips in a big way. And that was maybe the time to start looking at those back in March. Tips have done pretty well for 2016 for the entirety of the year. And I think that was pretty timely. We were starting to talk about bonds for the last year or so, but really honed in on it during that episode number 453. And again, this list, and you can play it right there. Every podcast is listed, and there's a little play box for each of them, is over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the blog button, and you'll find that in there. Number two is in January. This is one where we didn't have a guest. We called it The Right Barber is Good for Profits, episode number 447, where I found a better barber, and it led me to some thinking about portfolios. And we looked at some things about how you can possibly take a new look at your portfolios and maybe see some things that maybe you could change. And I also talked about the podcast I was on. I was actually a guest on Frank Curzio's podcast that week. And anyway, so that was number two. Number three, Barry Ritholtz and the Masters in Business. Barry launched a new podcast on Bloomberg. This is episode number 445. And we looked at the current conditions. Again, this was in January as well. And this is when markets were kind of selling off pretty significantly. We looked at the root causes of the concern of how investors may want to prepare for 2016. And we looked into his podcast. It was a great episode. Episode number 487 in December with Jack Vogel was number four. He brought us a detailed look at momentum investing, which I know a lot of you had a lot of interest in. And we looked on how to create your own momentum screen. Great episode. Number five, the Brexit aftermath with Das, one of your favorites. Episode number 467. And we explained some of the obvious and not so obvious implications of the Brexit vote. Some of the background as some of the areas that could be impacted in the future. Number six was episode number 477, where we spent most of the episode, or a good part of the episode, answering listener questions. And right on the website, there's an Ask Andrew area where you can just simply fill out your question, submit it, and we'll either get it on the air, one of the upcoming episodes. You can do that right now if you want. Or we'll send you an email, but we'll try to get a lot of these on the air as much as possible. We get a lot of them, so we kind of cull through them. But one way or another, you'll get an answer to your question. So you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on the Ask Andrew button. Now, in that episode, we talked about listener questions. There's a lot about the concern with the Fed and what investments may be most appropriate. That was in September. Number seven, good decisions in bad times, episode number 450 with Jordan Goodman. And also we had Dr. Rui Yeo, professor of personal finance at the University of Missouri. That was a great episode. We talked about why investors make bad decisions time and time again and how to avoid the traps and work towards logic over emotions. Number eight, investing with clean hands. Episode number 480. This is in October. James Lumberg of InvestNet. We talked about a review of history of returns for companies that have socially and more of an environmentally responsible governance plan. It was really interesting. Number nine, fake news and your portfolio. Episode number 486, back in November. We talked about this whole thing. There's a lot of interest on how this really affects your portfolios and your investments. This whole idea of fake news, which we talked about in the show. And this really encapsulated some of the issues. And number 10, rounding it out, a frank talk with Curzio, episode number 464 in May of 2016. And we talked about the important areas that you need to know about over the next few months and some of Frank's recent market calls and how he did and what he has to say about Nike and Apple and retail and gold, all of this. Episode number 464. So that's the top 10 episodes of The Disciplined Investor for 2016. I want to thank you so much for all your support, your listening, your friendship. It's awesome. Just terrific. And your emails and all the things that you say, I got to tell you, we do this out of a passion for not only education, but for learning. I learn a lot. I learn a lot from you. I learn a lot from our guests. I learn a lot from the research that we do for the show. So hopefully you do too. Hopefully all that we put into this has helped you become not only a better investor, but get more information from sources that maybe you didn't know about. Maybe introduction to some people, some newsletters, some writing, some research that maybe just weren't on your radar screen before. Again, that's one of the big reasons we've been doing this since 2000, I think it's 2008, because I get to also meet a lot of new people. I get to get an insight into research that I maybe never had before. It brings us an opportunity to speak to people that are the smartest in the world on topics that are of interest. I may or may not agree with them. You may or may not agree with them, but you know what? We need to have the information that is brought to us in hopefully a very thoughtful and an honest way. I try to make sure we're getting to the truth every time we talk to somebody. So I want to thank all the guests that appeared over the years and especially for 2016. Thank all the listeners and hope that you have a wonderful and a happy and a successful new year, a wonderful time with your family, much health and happiness. Thanks for everything you do for me. And thanks for keeping The Disciplined Investor one of the top podcasts out there. One of the top independent podcasts. Yeah, we compete with the big guys, but if you strip those all out, we're way up there. Massive downloads. We hit, 8 or 9 million downloads overall. Millions of downloads in 2016. And just again, thank you so much for everything you do. More information, just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Do me a favor, send a link to that to some of your friends this holiday season. Have them take a look also. Maybe they'll get on board as a listener to The Disciplined Investor as well. And maybe we'll put them and make them part of our listening family. Again, have a great holiday, a happy new year. I wish you the best. Thanks again.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.